Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So this is the section that we do when we look at TikToks, because this is something that ends up happening usually the first hour of my day exists with me checking what's happening on TikTok.
And sending 50,000 TikToks.
No, I send them to my team, my crew, like everyone around me gets a TikTok sent to them. It's my love language around different things that we kind of cross over in the world about. And so sometimes when I send them, they kind of spark a conversation. Also in our motive group, they spark a conversation. So it's a really good opportunity for us to bring what we find online to you back at home, as well as a little bit more about them, actually, about what we think. So what's your first one? What do you have?
So my first one is one around parenting and just growing up in a household with an African parent, with a black parent. There's always some form of PTSD that we have. And I wouldn't call it PTSD traditionally, but a professional called it that.
Okay, cool. I thought we're just misusing therapy language, but go on.
No. It's not war PTSD, but yeah, similar.
What traumatized me as a kid was I used to get PTSD every time I heard my parents' keys in the front door.
So I want to discuss the subtle and not so subtle ways in which our childhood environments shape us and the delicate balance of fostering healthy growth while ensuring safety in our homes. As a Black woman and mother, a licensed clinical psychologist, professor, and scientist, I have seen firsthand how household dynamics can deeply influence a child's sense of freedom and security. Imagine a child who, instead of seeing their home as a sanctuary, perceives it as a space where their every move is scrutinized, where the sound of keys in the door signals the end of freedom and the start of an invisible yet palpable tension. This isn't just about strict parenting. It's about an environment that instills hypervigilance in a child, that constant state of alertness to potential criticism or the need to meet spoken and unspoken expectations. Now, this scenario isn't unique, but it's particularly poignant in many Black households and households of African descent, where cultural and societal pressures often intertwine, creating an atmosphere where children must find it hard to just be. It's a place where doing the homework or chores isn't just about responsibility, but it's about proving the worthiness of leisure and enjoyment.
So I want to stop it there. Like, the last part was very poignant for me. Proving that leisure and enjoyment is worthy. Mm. Like, you've proven... Like, did you do your homework? Did you wash this? Did you do your chores? Ah, now you can laugh. Because if you dare laugh, if you dare watch a animation, if you dare go play with your friends, there's no enjoyment unless you've actually done the responsibilities or proven that you can now go and enjoy yourself.
Is that what actually happened to you, though?
Yeah.
That's wild.
Like, Black families are wild. And not just me. Like, I grew up like that. It's like as if Black mothers went to the same school. Like, even if you're sick from school and you laugh at something, it's like, oh, you're laughing now, yeah? So you're not sick, so you can go to school. So it's always as if there was a constant scrutiny. And maybe it was because I was the only child. There's no one you can hide behind. What was the experience like for you?
I think some of the ones that I remember is how you went up the stairs was a big deal in our house. And I remember, like, if you had a thing of, like, your mum snapped at you or told you something and it was perceived that you wouldn't like it, even if you didn't mind, and you went upstairs with heavy feet, you were stomping your feet and you were disrespectful. That was, like, just so heavily normalized. And I think if it was, if you then did actually stamp your feet, if you actually, and you knowingly did it, and you stomped up the stairs and you banged the door, my mum would meet you upstairs in less than 5 seconds. Like, she would come and get you.
Listen, we had fear of consequence. And I think I said it the other day, with gentle parenting, it feels like there's no fear of consequence. What does that look like in your household today?
Consequence is... So I think I still
have... I
wouldn't
say fear of consequence, just that that scenario of stomping away, you know, closing doors.
I think it's when you verbalize it. It's not necessarily just the you having a, like, a frustration and showing it when you walk away. It's more when you verbalize it in a disrespectful tone. But it's so funny, because when I spent time with Dr. Shefali, it was really clear that even that is something that you have to allow them to express. And so, like, an example was, like, if I say go to bed, and then, you know, one of my children's like, I don't want to go to bed, but they turn around and stomp off and walk. That's just their expression, right?
Yeah.
And for me, because my mom made that such a thing about disrespect, I feel now disrespected.
Of course, yeah.
And then I feel like I want to, you know, recreate her way of challenging it, which is to go after them and be like, I beg your pardon.
What do you tell yourself in that moment when that urge comes up?
The actual language is like, it's okay, they're right, they can feel that way, and they're still going to bed. The objective is to go to bed. The objective wasn't to, and the way I frame bed is like rest. So it's their objective to go to rest now so they can be powerful for tomorrow. So that's how I frame it. And their rejection of that is they may not feel like going to bed, but the fact that they're doing it is the goal. And if I hunt them down every time, I think it's called dissidence, every time they show some, if I hunt them down and, like, crush them a little bit, I think the impact then becomes negative long term. If you've got the objective, why go further? Because you want the respect and the objective, and usually at the cost of their peace and safety. We had that, I think I sent one to you, that video about, I think it was an NFL player, and he was just saying that, do not tell your children, do not yell at your children and then tell them to go to sleep. Because how can they sleep and rest knowing that their parents are threatening them, shouting at them, angry at them? Or don't, you know, yell at them in the morning and say, go to school and have a good day. How can I have a good day knowing how you feel and then knowing that I have to come back to that? So stop doing that. And I think about that, and actually often that would indirectly happen. And then I found quite a lot more solace and peace inside school than I did at home at a period of time. And that isn't good.
I can relate to that. I can relate to the peace part.
Yeah.
I felt like there was more control, there was more structure, there was strictness, but it was within bounds of, okay, you have 30 minutes now, it's break, so you can go have fun. I didn't earn break, it just is break.
Yeah.
And it felt like when I heard that, I was like, did I feel like I had to earn downtime, leisure time? And just how does that show up in your adult life? Does, like, also, let's start from the beginning with you, because I think you said it was more a stomping away, the action of it.
Yeah.
You felt like you could just, if there weren't any chores given to you, you could just laze around all Saturday in your childhood. What did that look like?
No. It was subconsciously known that you, whatever. So, like, my mom went out the night before. She might go to a christening, and, you know, Jamaican christenings, they start at 3 PM, go on all the way until 4 AM with just the adults. They're like a whole thing.
Wait, christening? As in baby being baptized?
Yeah. It's a all day and night affair, for sure. So, and they were really common back then. They're less common now. But those that used to happen, my mom might come in at 2-3 o'clock on a Friday, and it's Saturday morning, so she might wake up at 10. If she wakes up at 10 and we're watching cartoons, cereal bowls are out, mess on the surfaces, just dirt everywhere, we're in our boxers, she would wake up and not have that. Like, that's being disrupted immediately. So it was about getting up, and setting the foundations of the house first, or cleaning the house. And then if you had breakfast, there shouldn't be any trace of the fact that you've had breakfast. So you should have washed up by then. And I want to be clear, this isn't like militancy. It's just the underlying expectation.
Of course.
And maybe one in 10, she'll be fine and she'll just come down and be like, oh, I'm so tired and da-da-da-da, and just, you know, make a cup of tea or call for a cup of tea. Mm. But if you couldn't sit there for the whole day and watch cartoons on a Saturday. Like, we had objectives. We had stuff that we had to do.
Yeah.
And I think I quite like that. You know, I set the same thing for my children. Like, when I have them for a day, not for the day, but in a day, they will wake up and I might say, you can do whatever you want till midday. But from midday, then you need to clean up, and then there's food, and then there's like, you got to shower. You can't just sit in that state all day. I think that's unhealthy. But I do like that structure. I think it's really important.
It's about structure and routine more than anything, right? It's about making sure that you have obligations to fulfill throughout the day.
Yeah.
And then you can have fun. But I think what she's talking about is, even if you have done your chores and you are now bored and you're banging something on the wall or you're just making a mess, then it's like, oh, you're bored. Come, clean this or clean that.
Yeah,
that's technically how I grew up.
I think the problem with that is then you don't get a chance to find out what happens when you're bored. I think as a child, when you're bored, you get to your most creative and you come up with some great ideas and you express yourself in the best ways possible to entertain yourself. I think that always doing is it's a nightmare. Like, I've been in a relationship with someone that must always do. And you'd wake up, there's no in bedtime. There's no, we're just watching TV. If we're not practically watching a film, there's no just chilling. There's always an up and prepping for tomorrow, the day after tomorrow. Oh, there's some washing to do.
Is that, filling time.
Yeah, and I feel like that makes everything uneasy. And so I know what the other side of that can be, and it's not peaceful to be around.
Yeah.
But I understand that it comes from a place, but I just think the impact it has in a real way, you know, is something that you have to figure out to evolve out of.
100%. 100%. I would love to just snap and one day evolve out of that because it shows up in my adult life.
Mm.
So the example of having earned leisure.
Mm.
So if I spent a Saturday not doing anything, the Sunday, best believe, I'm going to be prepping. I'm going to be prepping for the week. I'm going to be cleaning. I'm going to be doing laundry. I'm going to make up for the day that I just spent in bed and I didn't do anything.
Mm.
That's one thing. The other thing is I also trauma clean.
Well, what does that mean? How do you now trauma clean?
So when I'm anxious or when I've had a fight or when something's heavy on my mind, when I feel heavy, I clean. I just clean and I do laundry and I keep busy. Mm. I keep my hands busy to keep my mind from racing. So
you're like a patriarchal man's dream then?
What? A patriarchal man's dream is to fight with his woman so she can clean the house?
No, you just clean.
But I'm not in a state of anxiety or of, you know, heaviness all the time. So there are days when I don't do that. But I've noticed that when I am in my hyper-focused cleaning, there's usually something going on. It's either I'm anxious about something or I've had an argument with someone and I'm trying to think over what just happened, but while I'm being busy. Mm. But yeah, that's quite interesting to see how it shows up. It would have been so interesting to have an actual expert here to give us some insight on how the brain works and how you unlearn those things.
What's the next one you got?
The next one I got is something that I've typically started seeing online. I started seeing it late last year. Mm. Mostly on South African TikTok, South African Twitter.
Mm.
And it's this woman. You won't be able to see it on screen, but we're going to put it up. But all you can hear is music, and she's crying into the camera, and it says... It says the not-so-glamorous side of traveling alone, right? And it's not really about traveling alone, but it's about loneliness. There's so many people are so lonely out there, and they take to the internet to tell people, you know, I'm lonely.
Yeah.
And it hurts, and I don't have a partner, and I don't have someone to travel with.
Mm. Have you been lonely before? Have you identified that to yourself?
Yeah.
What was happening for you at the time?
Yeah. Look, as I mentioned before, I'm an only child. So being alone is not really a problem for me. But it's in the moments where I have people around me and I still feel alone, where I'm more conscious of feeling lonely. And the loneliness for me is more around just feeling like you're the only person in the world.
Mm.
I think I've said that so many times. Like, I just feel like I'm the only person in the world and no one else is there. But it's obviously a lie. It's your brain telling you that.
Mm.
Because you have friends. You have people that love you. You have family. And very often, and I don't want to attribute this to my star sign, I'm a Scorpio. Mm.
Do you know what? I can't unhear Neil deGrasse Tyson saying that it's absolute nonsense. And I can't unhear it. But continue. Sorry. It's important to you. I don't want to disrespect the frameworks you're using. Go on,
it's not that important to me, but...
But you're going to use it anyway. Go on. Tell us why the stars made you do stuff. And go on.
Can you give me a chance? But we are generally people that love being by ourselves, and we can't have shallow conversations and discussions with people.
Mm.
So very often I feel like people don't always want the heavy stuff. You know, people want light friends that can just talk about surface level stuff. How's your day going? Oh, the weather. Oh my God, your hair. What color is that? Where did you go? And I can do that for about 5 minutes, but I can't do it for very long.
Mm.
So the loneliness creeps in when I feel like I can't reach out to people who gets the depths of loneliness that I'm in and won't make it heavy or try and fix it. They'll just sit there and listen.
Mm.
And there's really nothing you can do about that kind of loneliness. You have to find the solace within yourself because people can't fix that for you.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is it has become a trend that I see of women just going on the internet. I find it very challenging to see someone prop up a camera and then cry. And it doesn't mean that the feelings are not authentic. It just means that
What is that trend all about? Like, is that just like feigning? Maybe it's not. Maybe it's authentic. So, creating empathy artificially to do what? What happens after?
But that's my question.
You know, I suppose the same thing as who the fuck did I marry? It's a bit of that, isn't it? Like, you told that story, but you went to 60 episodes because what's the payoff for it?
Mm.
What's the payoff for being seen crying on your Instagram? Will a man see that and be like, oh, I want that woman? Or what would happen? Or would other women come together and be like, I want to be your friend? I don't know. What do you think happens? I have no idea.
My question is, what kind of people will be drawn to you based off of that?
Well, that's a really good question. If you pose as a victim,
you
attract predators. No?
Yeah, exactly. My point. Mm. However, we have to, you know, just trust that people have agency to decide and have discernment to be like, you're just here because you saw my video.
Yeah, but the thing about predators, they don't come saying I'm a predator. They're not. They don't look like lions.
True.
They'll look like deer.
like gazelles.
Yeah. No, I do find so firstly on loneliness, I think that's an interesting topic. Like I've never been alone, but I've always felt lonely.
Mm.
And I think that's just a matter of my neurodivergency just kicking in. It just is a thing where my brain operates faster. And people think that means that it's better. Not necessarily, I'd like to turn it off at points, but brain operates faster. I go through processes and emotions faster. So like in the saddest moment, I can be on the other side of it in a few days, genuinely. And I think for some people it's challenging, like they expect me to sit there for months and be sad about something and I'm not really that type of person. I think just delayed responses. There's loads of things I think about being neurodivergent that isolates you, especially if you're surrounded by neurotypicals, if you don't know who your people are.
Mm.
What's really interesting is that whenever I am challenged, when I'm around other neurodivergent people, there is a community of understanding of how to approach it, like how to be with me without doing anything.
Mm.
And I never forget, I think I told the story of when I was divorcing one of my closest friends. Like I just moved out of the house and I was staying in a hotel. My closest friend came and sat with me for basically like 5-6 days.
Mm.
And he bought me food and he just sat there, didn't say anything, didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
He was just being a real one. And on the other side, my neurotypical friends were like challenging the issue. Why? How? Mm. What? When? Tell me things. And you're like, I get it. But like, that's probably the worst time to try and get sense. Because also I was just so devastated that I just didn't have the appropriate level of things to say on the topic at the time. So it just meant that like that I was putting energy in the world that I probably shouldn't have. So yeah, I think generally being alone is a thing that occurs often, but I have a lot of acceptance around it. And actually I think it's for the best, because as I said with my examples, sometimes it's just too heavy to carry the needs of a neurotypical person when you're going through something big yourself.
Yeah.
Or when you're trying to achieve something, you need to then communicate it to maybe sometimes people who inherently just won't understand anyway, or have a lot of fear in the way that they exist. And so they then inject their fear or limitations on what you're just trying to get done, which is not always a great way. So the most neurodivergent people I know operate independently or in tiny silos anyway. And they're really high achieving, but really just struggle with sometimes the social aspect of interactions. So that is definitely a thing. The trend of like trying to get
crying
online. Look, I think the expression is really powerful because it unites people around an idea in a way that it wouldn't have. We don't discuss loneliness as a society enough. I worry that it creates this performative nature. So what's authentic in it? And to set a tripod up and then start to cry is something else than if you set a tripod up to try and do a piece to camera and then you started talking about how you feel, you broke, and it just hit you. And even if you share that, that becomes really powerful. But because without the context, it just looks performative, because she did look like she was genuinely crying. But it just felt like the first thing, I started getting rational before I got emotionally connected to her on that particular occasion.
Yeah.
And I'm an empath, so I feel like that was a massive disconnect. I don't really like the trend. I'd rather people find real ways to have the conversation with somebody else.
I agree. What do you do when you have that cycle of loneliness? How do you break it?
I don't try to break it. I think that's another thing that's become really important. Like, I think since 2020, I had some of the worst experiences as an adult since 2020. And I isolated myself to navigate them, because I couldn't tell what was real anymore. There were so many moving parts, so many inauthenticities, so much challenges, that if I didn't remove myself, like bearing in mind it was like running a company, separation into divorce, changing personal relationships, COVID, George Floyd, I was just like, look, I have a view. Like in real time, I always had a view, but the view wasn't connecting to my surroundings and what people needed or expected or wanted. And so I felt like that was creating more challenge. And the fact that I wasn't more affected probably made it feel like it was something to challenge me on. And so I just pulled away and I just spent some time with myself. That's when I did my silent retreat. That's when I did a lot of therapy. I was in like weekly for about 18 months, which was really powerful for me, because you just have to get into the things. I think when a big institution like marriage fails for you, you can't return back to that way of living. It would be so inauthentic to sit there and be like, oh, I'll just do this again. And maybe if I do it with a different person, it would be like all of those things, because I don't think I did it with a bad person. I don't think I necessarily did it in a bad way. I just think it didn't work. And you need answers as to what that means for you now. Not necessarily why it didn't work, because even with those answers, it's not always clear what that means. I just went into, who am I now? What kind of life would I want to live now? And I kind of got the answer pretty quickly, but I just wanted to shred everything. All the ego, the persona, the act, the, you know, who I thought I was, my challenges with fatherhood. I was like, I can't go to other people and talk to about fatherhood. I actually need an answer for myself. So obviously Dope Black Dads was a question of how do I become a better dad, and I didn't have the answer when I started it. But then I spent a year and a half talking to other people about their experiences and ignoring my own. And I was like, I actually want my own answers. And then I found my answers and I had an amazing period afterwards where like parenting was the best thing. It's all I really wanted to do. And I had all these other commitments. So I think my way of dealing with it is, you know, to isolate. But I feel self-imposed isolation is good. I feel that is something that I want to do more, and I will do more. And I also don't really want to, I'm more retreating about the idea of sharing some of those things. more than anything. And for the only reason of just like, I need a little piece of the universe that's mine. And I think that that's one of the areas that I would like to preserve as much as possible. I think it's quite a beautiful thing to just be by yourself, preferably in nature, which is where I did my retreat.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
Sounds beautiful. I feel that soul searching journeys like that don't often happen for people, or they don't have the luxury to do it. You know, especially if you're a parent, you have responsibilities. Where does, you know, taking time away, where does that fit in for parents who aren't co-parenting, for parents who are together in one household with someone and they need that time to find answers for themselves?
Yeah, I think if I was to ever go back 15 years and do marriage into co-parenting again, it's not that I would do it different because of the person. I would just approach the whole thing differently. I think the idea of, like, I got married at 28. I met that person when I was 26. I wasn't fully adulting yet. Like, I was in, like, the early stages of acting out adulthood. I hadn't arrived. So much of the habits and behaviors I picked up weren't really appropriate and conducive to family, to like my own well-being, to looking after children, to being a man for another adult woman. Like, it just, there's loads of things that were missing. And I couldn't find them out in the throes of the thing. So for me now, it's fundamental that there's time apart. I think relationships, healthy ones, have real time apart where you go be who you are, your best self, and enjoy your version of existing to come bring back to the collective and enrich the collective. I also just think, like, if you're not actively working on some of the ideas that you have and why you have them, I think you're setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
I think, you know, all the theory of being a man, being a woman, being married, being a dad, being a mum, are inherently flawed, especially if you're not neurotypical. And more than that, if you are not standardized in your way of thinking. And if you've gone through really big things, a lot of those concepts won't work for you out of the box. If you don't know who you are, you can't even apply new rules to the old concepts, let alone create a new one. So I would never do that again. I would do it in a way that was befitting to who I actually am, and I think it would be much more successful. A lot of the I think the biggest thing that flawed,
you're the Englishman here.
No, do you know why?
Because
I heard flawed like a flawed diamond, and I meant flawed as in like the flawed me, or I was on the floor.
You actually have that as a word here.
Yeah,
many people don't know flawed is actually a word.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you fall though.
No, it means that I am on the floor, as in I've reached my bottom.
Oh, it has a different meaning in South Africa for coloured folk.
What does it mean? Go on, tell
me. So if you floored me, you killed me, you KO'd me. I laughed so hard you floored me.
Yeah, but then imagine that as in like you gave me information that was serious and it floored me. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of similar. Okay. This is interesting language exchange. Mm. So I think a lot of those things brought me to an unnecessarily challenged place, and I think a lot of them could have been avoided with just a bit more wisdom and experience.
So would you say that wisdom and experience come with age? What about people who find that they have, you know, that deep sense of urgency and conviction to get married at 24 and 25?
I would never advocate to interrupt somebody's vision of their marriage and children. You do the thing, you do it in your way. And inherently, I think we all do. I think we all look for validation for our method of what we're trying to do. True. Or to keep our dreams alive. Like if you want to be a mother or a father so much, you will seek validation that your way of doing it will be successful.
True. And there are many, many, many sources to validate.
Many
that
sources
for you.
That you can go through and you will find your, you know, your master in terms of that information.
So what do you have to ask yourself then?
Well, I think the first thing is that why do you want to become a father and what do you have to offer your children? And I think anything that is material or external is probably a bad answer. If you're talking about internal, it has to be devoid of your ego. Mm. And then you also have to treat whatever you have to give as a gift. So you're not, it's not an exchange with children. You don't get it back. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to teach my son to be the greatest football player of all time. And as
and
a result,
I'll get and then infinity I'll manage him. Tickets to
yeah.
Manchester.
I'll manage him, become his agent and get 12% for his career. Like if you go into it with that, you will destroy your relationship with your child. Yeah. So for me, I think it's a gift. And that means you have to have abundance to even give it as a gift. Which is the hilarious part, because I think much in masculinity is as you develop capacity, you must use it to protect and provide someone, somewhere, somehow. Mm. And, you know, men having an abundance, that's a very like divine feminine energy. That's for me, that's like you've preserved yourself. You have created boundaries. You are practicing stillness, you are connected to your body, the sensations that your body has. None of these things you're taught to do as men. So we have like, oh, I've got 10% battery life, I've got to use it to make more money, so I'm going to stay up and type out this presentation, or I've got to do it to record another thing. We just deplete. And I think that's a massive part of why we have inequity in us and why we get so sick and why we then abandon a lot of the families that we create is because we don't actually fill our own cup. I think that's a massive thing, I think.
Mm. Interesting.
What's the next one?
The next one is a little bit long. I think it'll be our last one. So this one, I'm going to play a part of it. You sent it to me. So maybe we can elaborate together after. But this one is around a man who was engaged to his partner for quite some time. Mm. She has a daughter who is getting married. And the biological father has since come into the picture and he's just venting about it. So here it is.
Oh, wow. My stepdaughter's waiting because her real daddy is the one that's going to walk her down the aisle. So let me tell you guys about my stepdaughter, all right? She wants her real daddy to walk her down the aisle. Now, let me give you a little backstory on me and my stepdaughter. She just graduated from university, which I paid for. Now, she went to an in-state university, but it still cost me about $40,000. Now, I also bought her a car. I bought her a car straight after high school. That way she could go back and forth to school. I bought her a car. She still lives with me and her mother. She does not have a job. Now, she's set to be married on August the 8th. And for the past 6 months, that's all her mother been talking about doing, being occupied with, being consumed most of their time. Now, her daddy, he don't contribute to not 1 cent on her. Not her education, not child support, which is partly her mother's fault because, you know, she didn't fight for that. And that, I guess that's just what the settlement was. And he only around to make promises. I do that for you. I do this for you. And then take off. And then she'd be heartbroken. But she adores her father, right? So, like I said, she's set to be married in August. And the wedding venue, I told them they can have it in my home. The wedding venue can hold about 250 people, right? Now I said, hey, I got a list of 20 people that I want to come to the wedding. I'm paying for it, it's at my house. I want these 20 people to come. Do y'all know Saturday, I see one of my friends at the golf course, right? He's supposed to come to the wedding. I'm like, hey, I'm gonna see you at the wedding, right? He said, I only got an announcement. I didn't get an invite. I'm like, nah. I'll let my girlfriend and stepdaughter know to send out the invitations on these few people, and you're supposed to get an invite. He said, I got something, but it was an announcement. So we walked to his car because I want to check, right? Mm. And sure enough.
So I'm going to cut it short there because technically what he's saying is, out of all of these arrangements, he's been paying, and he's technically been accepting, and it's not his fiance, it's his girlfriend, accepted her as his own, taking care of her as his own. And now that the biological father has shown up, he's going to walk her down the aisle. He goes further to talk about they're going to dance, do the daddy-daughter dance to his picked-out song, and they're also going to do a thing afterwards, but it's as if it's secondary. So technically, he's being pushed out. Also, the 20 people out of 250 guests that they are inviting hadn't been invited. So first things first, where do we start with the situation? This man is in distress, but it seems that he's said that he's done. He's cut them off and no one's coming back to his house. He's done with his girlfriend of, I think, over a decade they've been together, if not more, 15 years, something like that. How do you recover from that? How do you as a man recover from that? Having spent and invested so much.
Yeah, look, our platform is called Dope Black Dads. In that is the most inclusive, broader term of dads, including stepdads, father-in-laws, male guardians, all the things. It's really just about men who show up for children and young people and play an active role in their lives. And this guy has done that. He has shown, you know, the truest caliber of what a great man can do. What the sad part is that that's not being honoured by the people that he's done that with and for. And it's sad because I think when I hear a lot of the conversations that men are communicating is that, cool, we haven't been amazing, but there are some things that women do also, which is deeply damaging. And like a lot of my work centers on what men need to do. And I think it appears that he had a vision where he thought he was the head of a household and a family. And he has found out that he is not. And he is a vehicle for their safety and security, but he hasn't got the equity in the family. That's a really hard thing to find out in context. It's a really hard thing to find out when you have a mirror of the dad who didn't do the things that you did. Mm-hmm. I think there is a safe space around like walking down the aisle. I think you can still give that up to the biological father if that's her wish. Because I think that's a space that holds. If he's alive and breathing and that's her choice, you can take that. I think where it gets disrespectful is where like in his house for it, the 20 guests that he wanted to come were like removed without a conversation.
That's true.
And then I think some of the other gestures of like paying for it, you know, removing, you know, not accommodating him in the view of like the father-daughter dance. Things like coming up with different ways to do it to honor the fact that you played a role. And it just means that the relationship with the child wasn't where he thought it was. And that could have been orchestrated by the mother. That could have been orchestrated just by her. But however, I feel that there is, I want to say collusion, but that feels a bit violent, between the mother and the daughter to create this context. Like they've had a conversation. They both are on the same page about what this is. And it makes me sad because I think when we advocate, you know, especially as a platform, that men should do more, these are the counters that we get thrown with. And so the reason why I focus on that, because I put a post up on Dope Black Dad's Instagram recently about men and we've ruined our relationship with black women. And a lot of men were frustrated with that narrative because they feel, well, what about us? And it's happened to us too. And what my point is that I only focus on our work. I'm not interested in discussing what women need to do for men. You know, I feel there are so many great women out there who are not engaging in this dialogue and this rhetoric, who yeah. are hungry and I say hungry and desperate in the most loving way for a partner to show up and honor them in a way, make them feel safe and mm. seen and secure them. And they will give everything they have for that man.
Yeah.
And they're available. They're just around. They exist in every single space that you're in.
They're friend zoned.
They're friend zoned or they're not seen as the most desirable, but they're the women that you build empires with, right?
Yeah.
And so I think whenever a man has created a life on a platform talking about women, he is disingenuous in that approach. Because if any man with a purpose and a mission would be focused on his purpose and his mission.
Mm.
What I've identified along my purpose and my mission is that men need grabbing on the way to whatever it is that I'm doing.
Mm.
I need to hold space for men as a skill set that I have, and I do it. But I don't want to sit there and talk about what women are thinking, doing, and how they're behaving and how it's wrong. I think there's this like idea that men, some men, have dominion over women to the point that if they choose to move away from men and how they interact with them and create boundaries and create conversations about men, that it's their immediate responsibility to interrupt that conversation, guide it into an outcome, which means they are more accessible to more men
mm.
more often.
Mm.
I'm saying that's a losing conversation for men to get involved in, because some women have chosen their path in terms of what they want for themselves. If in 10 years time, a generation of women say they regret having this conversation, I just wish I just put up with the man that we had and we just settled down and I wish I got cheated on more. Absolutely, that's their conversation to have mm. about their regrets. But it's not to say men are struggling to find partners. There's
yeah.
so many. So I don't know who's affected by this shift. I don't know why it's important for them to have that feeling. I do know a lot of men are hurt from their experiences
mm.
and they feel they never got any justice in the relationship and they never got it from the conversations that society are having. And now it feels like there's this massive shift where men are not allowed to speak.
Mm.
So they feel like they need to find that justice. That's why we have male-led spaces. That's why you have therapy. That's why you have psychologists. That's why you have a Reiki healing team. You go get a massage. You go mm. get, you know, a facial. Whatever it is to make you feel better about you without having to lean on women, but specifically Black women, to have the conversation about your feelings.
Why specifically Black women?
Because I think that's where my care primary starts. That's the observations that I've made that's the most urgent. That's the most important conversation. And I feel like our interactive, like obviously Dope Black Dads, there are partners who have white partners and partners from other cultures. Absolutely fine. It's nothing to do with who you can love. But Black women are in our homes from our birth.
Mm.
And there is a relationship that has been fractured with some men and some women that culture is now so normalized that it's everywhere.
Mm.
And it feels huge. And the only way we're going to get out of it is if men focus on their advancements, their ability to protect and provide honor, to be emotionally stable, to be powerful. And that creates a context. You will attract your tribe just like that. Like, I don't even want women who don't want to be around men, who don't want to be accessed by men, who feel men are bad people. Like, I just, it doesn't matter. It's a waste of thought. I'm not trying to convince those.
What do you mean with that?
I'm like the woman that they're referring to that they feel must pander to their feelings,
mm-hmm.
and those women who are hurt and are communicating how they've been hurt by men,
mm-hmm.
and how they want a boundary with men and men shouldn't do this, and you know, I can't attract that person energetically. We're not in the same space. If I want to build with someone like that, they're not in a position to build. Because they're in their hurt phase. And that guy's in his hurt phase. He can't build if he's hurt. He can't be the anchor for you if he's in his feelings about a conversation that's happening out in the world. But when I meet real women one-on-one, I know where you are at. Mm. And those women who are amazing and ready and looking for a partner, they're ready. But that's the point of it. Like, they're ready because they're ready.
So, you know, I've had this conversation before, not too long ago, around men and hurt. And how, you know, where does men's deep-rooted hurt stem from that we see in an old, mature man that's in his 50s and 60s and still being hurt by that 15-year-old girl who said, ew, you're ugly, or whatever the case might be. The wounding, the mother wound, we spoke about that.
Yeah.
Like, you said that that hurt infiltrates so deeply into our lives that we don't recognize it. So does that then mean, because we all suffer from mother wounds, father wounds, we suffer. But it seems as if men hold on to that hurt in a deep way, and there's a fragility there. There's a there's a fragility, there's a sensitivity, and there's a, almost I want to say sensitiveness. Yeah, there's a sensitiveness there for men when it comes to exposing their hurt. And it's almost as if they're like, no one will get past this threshold because of one person that hurt me or because of my mother wound. So where do we start if we're just hurt people walking around hurting other people?
Well, I think there's so much in that question, but I think we all are hurt and we're all holding on to our things. I think the mother wound, specifically to men, holds more directly. The father wound works much more directly to women. But we also have the wound of our fathers and your mothers. So it does work both ways. But I think the mother wound is about the generational experiences that the mother has had. And that's direct and indirect, which then goes into their parenting process and decision-making, their partner partner decision-making, and gets fed into the children.
So to avoid speaking over people's heads, let's give a practical example what we would say. We're not therapists, but what would we say a mother wound?
I would say a woman growing up with a disinterested father who is abusive to her mother, and she processes that, creates meaning out of that and observations about a role of a man. And I want a man who can protect me, provide for me. And then that design is what she then tries to create in her own relationship. But that person then recreates what happens that with her mother. And then that child is then birthed, whether it's a boy or girl, with that hurt that she's experienced from two generations, gets plowed into them as a child. They then absorb that. And if you absorb it as a man, it's different to how you absorb it as a woman. So as a man, it could be that I don't believe women are capable of providing without men. Or I don't think that they are stable. I think that I had to provide for my mum when I was 16. So, you know, their relationship to women is now different and fractured. And they don't understand how healthy masculinity should be displayed. And I think the generational element of it gets passed down in such a nuanced way, because as a child, more than likely, you get to see your grandparents. So you get to see your grandparents' grandparents' impact on your grandparents. Does that make sense? And that then goes into your mother, then that goes into you. So it's almost five generations of hurt is plowed into and visible through your grandparents into you. And you're like, actually, if we don't all individually go on a journey to break that cycle, we will recreate the exact same scenarios that we've come from. I think people are still living a 1960s, 70s, 50s relationship today because they heard stories of their grandmother and then it's been passed on to their mother, then passed on to them. And they believe that that original version that was told through their grandparents is what's present today. The whole game is completely different. And so I think it's for all of us to be aware. I took it for myself. I needed to be aware of, you know, even what I believed a strong black woman should be like and how problematic that language was in my 20s. And, you know, seeing my mom do so much by herself is my vision of what a good woman now looks like. And then the idea of a woman not being able to do that is like, why can't you do that? My mom is the level. If you're not that level, you're not the kind of woman that I should be with. These are problematic things because I then place onto somebody an idea of what they should be, which is never attainable because my mother is my superhero.
And she's an individual on her own, in individual her own right, and grew up in a different time. I think that for me, it's really important that we always talk about both sides, the hurt that men have and inflict, and the hurt that women have and inflict as well. And it's absolutely correct that you say we don't give the hurt that women inflict as much attention as we do with the hurt that men inflict, because it's more physical. It's harmful.
Yeah,
you could die.
And this is a really important thing to, I know we need to close, but this is a really important differentiator. The reason why a woman's feelings in this regard takes precedent is and priority is because how men display this is through physical violence, sexual absolutely violence, true, economic abuses. Yeah. And I think those things create a much bigger
impact
as well as psychological and physical. I think the damage that women do to men is a lot more emotional and mental.
Yeah.
And I think then that means a lot of it is hidden, but it also just means that it has doesn't have the physical component part, which happens and occurs in women. Mm. So I think we end up focusing on the women's feelings. So we do need to focus on the men's feelings, but just not at the cost of the women's feelings and absolutely their experiences.
100%.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Cool session. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.